Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking out?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
I kind of wanted to apologise to Roy Hodgson.
What, on behalf of Tony Evans?
No, I was discourteous to him in the last pod.
Were you?
Yeah, because I made a thing out of how, like, he claims to speak all the Scandinavian languages, whereas in fact he just speaks like a weird mashup of the three. And I mean, which is true, he kind of does, but I don't think he's claimed to speak all three of them. I think it has been claimed of him.
Right.
And I think it's an important distinction. One thing is being a braggart, and the other thing is speaking weird.
He'd make an excellent character in The Bridge.
If I were to ask you, chaps, from the week's Champions League action, what was your favourite part of VAR-inspired stoppage time? Would it have been the 9 minutes at the end of Leipzig versus Benfica or the 7 minutes at the end of Valencia versus Chelsea, Lars?
I mean, I don't have a great preference between them, but I did enjoy Daniel Vaz getting one for Valencia, even if it was sort of a slightly shanked cross, probably.
What are you saying?
Well, I enjoyed it because Daniel Vaz has actually played. When he was young, he was sent on loan from Brøndby to a team that was struggling in the relegation battle in the Norwegian top division. And then they immediately had a change of manager who just decided they didn't want attacking fullbacks. And so he was bombed out. He's a guy who's been thrown on the bench and completely just failed at a pretty bad team. At the time, Fredrikstad in Norway.
I thought you were going to say that changed his ways.
Out of people who have been poor in the Norwegian top division relegation battle, I think he's probably gone the furthest afterwards.
Was your not reaction to that goal, was ist das? because I think Kepa was asking himself that because he thought, it's going over. He should have tipped it over. And he just was like, it's not going in, is it?
In the stoppage time itself, despite Leipzig turning things round in their stoppage time and making the most of it and getting the point that took them through, I was a big fan of, in the 6 minute of stoppage time in Valencia-Chelsea, that miss by Rodrigo. That was pretty special.
The misses all round by Valencia over that night were just incredible. Not just Dani Parejo's penalty miss. He becomes the all-time missiest penalty taker in Champions League history.
Which is weird, because he's domestically, he scored a bunch of them, right?
In his Champions League career?
In his Champions League career,
Is that right?
Yeah.
Does that include his time at QPR?
I think he's missed QPR in the Champions League. Can you imagine?
They were going for it. Yeah. I remember interviewing Julio Cesar these years back. And,
lovely guy.
It really nice. I remember sitting there in their training ground in Harlington going, I signed here because the project was to get in the Champions League. And the bottom of the table at the time under Mark Hughes. He's like, Mark Hughes, a bit quiet.
Jose Mourinho for a long spell, or 2 years.
I suppose so.
This is such a rabbit hole you've gone down here, Andy.
Yeah, yeah.
Of the Champions League, you've asked us our favourite VAR moments, and now we're talking about QPR.
I'm delighted I managed to turn it into the Norwegian relegation battle 2009, which was the vintage year for that sort of thing.
Mm.
I mean, Daniel Vass, I love this. I need to quote this because he said later that the manager who benched him, who didn't fancy him, said that he, and I quote, it was a shit person and an idiot, which I think... As far as comments about your former managers go, it's pretty good.
But pretty ambiguous.
He doesn't even deserve a mention. I think that's quite fitting in the week of Gary Monk getting his honesty on. But yeah, let's go back to the main bit of the Champions League. Let's look at Liverpool versus Napoli. I know you were looking at that very closely on the BT Goal Show last night, James. How do Napoli play like this in the Champions League and not domestically?
Well, I do think that in some respects, Napoli are Liverpool's kryptonite because, they keep playing against them. They invariably beat them. As we saw at the San Paolo last season, San Paolo this season, in pre-season. I suppose what was surprising about this, I didn't know what Napoli was going to turn up because of everything that's happened in the last fortnight with the mutiny, the players getting fined, all the speculation about Carlo Ancelotti's future. The players' future, whether there'll be a fire sale in January. I mean, that just doesn't make any sense. I mean, come on, sell your best players.
That'll show them.
At a low price and then, completely just tank your way out of the Champions League, which they're already, 5 points, I think, outside the Champions League places in Serie A anyway. I mean, it's just ludicrous. But I think this, again, just goes to show what a great manager Carlo Ancelotti is, who is, a captain of the ship in a storm and is able to kind of focus his players' minds, get rid of all the kind of distractions. I thought it was really interesting hearing him talk before the game itself, actually, because he was asked, come on, Carlo, this has been probably the most difficult set of circumstances you've ever faced as a manager. You've got players at war with the club, the president at war with, your senior guys, Alan, Insigne, and all this sort of thing. Where's Insigne? He hasn't come with you. And... Instead, he just said, no, actually, there's a real restored sense of harmony here, real serenity. We all get on great. Dressing room's brilliant, really healthy. I think all this media speculation, I think you should, stop speculating about stuff, really. We're just going to get on with it. And I think he got the mood just right. And I think his tactics were also spot on. In some respects, we've seen Napoli often play with kind of three centre-backs, but it's usually very much geared towards one of the fullbacks pushing up and playing as a winger and really kind of overloading on that side. This time it was pure three centre backs
because Maksimović came in, didn't he?
Maksimović, Manolas, and Kalidou Koulibaly, and then it was two proper wing back fullbacks in Mario Rui, who has got an attacking more attacking sense than Giovanni Di Lorenzo on the other side, but it was all geared towards basically saying you can have the ball, we'll control the space. We're not going to give you any kind of space in behind. We're not going to allow you to get any kind of speed in your game. And I think it really frustrated Liverpool. And a colleague of mine in Italy posted a photo of like Klopp's face during, remember his first game with Dortmund at the San Paolo, where he absolutely went loopy at the fourth official and ended up going to have to watch the game with a janitor. And then his face during this game, which I think the refereeing in this game was... I think both the crowd felt that he let a lot of things go. Mm. Napoli felt he let a lot of things go. Liverpool felt he let a lot of things go. But yeah, I mean, I think it was not surprising in the recent series of games that Napoli have had against Liverpool, because they've shown they can beat them. But it was surprising in the set of circumstances in which they went into this game.
And you know, this is where we think of Ancelotti doing his best work, really, isn't it? In a Champions League context. I mean, for me, one of the most shocking Champions League knockout games of recent years is when he was the Bayern coach and they played Real Madrid. It was a game I went to at the Allianz Arena, and they're 1-0 up, totally on top of things. Then they missed a penalty and got taken apart by Cristiano Ronaldo and Marco Asensio either side of the break. And that, the feeling in the ground that night was, it's hard to describe, because you feel like you're on top of the world, you feel like you're battering Real Madrid, and it all falls apart in 10 minutes. And Ancelotti had no response. I was shocked by that because, you know, you do see him as someone who's got this mastery in the Champions League and an enduring mastery in the Champions League. And he's definitely given Napoli an edge. They were very, very unlucky not to get through what was a difficult group last season, though the best team in it, five games in, and lost at Anfield on the last game. That knocked them out of the top two. Barring accidents, they're going to get in the knockout rounds this year.
Yeah.
Is this a way of them salvaging their season? And what a part B to that question, I suppose, is how can Ancelotti take the good feeling from the Champions League back to Serie A and start to sort things out there?
So at the start of every Champions League season, I always think we have to ask ourselves who can be the dark horse, because there's usually a gatecrasher into the semi-finals. And I think that's what still makes the competition so
you just back whoever's got Fernando Llorente.
And I do look at Napoli now and, you know, everyone's kind of been writing them off. But if you just look at the sample size, you just look at their Champions League form alone, it's hard not to be impressed by it. You know, 4 points from six against Liverpool, how they played in both of those games.
Late win in Salzburg.
The late win at Salzburg in what was a thrilling game there as well. And we've all seen how difficult an opponent Salzburg are. And I think, you know, the only disappointing game was the 0-0 in Genk, which, you know, had they won that, had Milik taken his chances, Milik still out of sorts at that time, you know, they would already be qualified. But I think, is this team capable of putting everything that's happened behind them and moving on? I'm still curious because after the game last night, for example, Mertens is walking through the mixed zone. He's asked, you know, can you stop and talk? He says, no, I can't talk. And then he makes a gesture, which is like, I'll get fined again.
Right.
Because I think the players were disappointed that these legal letters came through before this game, basically saying, yeah, it's the club's intention to dock you 25% of your wages for October for what happened after the Salzburg game. And on Friday, there will be talks between the president, De Laurentiis, and the players. And De Laurentiis...
Are the players' union getting involved?
Well, I think they can appeal and talk to the players' union in Italy, which is represented by Damiano Tommasi, a former QPR midfield player. Let's bring it full circle. And, of course, they can then decide whether to go to tribunal or not, which would be...
What a damaging situation.
Remarkable.
But I thought it was interesting that Tommasi specified that the decision to go on a retiro or not is a technical one that lies with the manager, given that Ancelotti did utter some scepticism to the whole idea.
Well, Ancelotti disapproved of the club's decision to go into retiro, constructive detention, essentially. but, you know, he then honoured the club's word.
Because he turned up.
Because he turned up and he said, right, I'm going to go and do this. Are you coming with me? And the players said no. And I think that was one of the things that was really surprising, that, you know, come the end of the international break, Carlo Ancelotti hasn't resigned. And he said last night that he never considered resigning, that he's never resigned in his 30-year coaching career.
Okay.
It's just not part of his makeup. But I think there's still a real chance that this spirals and it drifts. Because I think there's very little margin for error. I mean, if you look at what Napoli's kind of, in terms of how they're playing in Serie A, they're still creating chances. They're not taking them in the way that they were last season. The problem is that the teams that they were doing better than last season, they've come on leaps and bounds. They've improved. And so any kind of stagnation from Napoli is going to be costly. They'll lose ground to the likes of Lazio, even Atalanta, and Roma, for example.
They're starting to look the part, aren't they?
So and they've been shown up by Cagliari as well. So I think the ones that will can go the distance are very much Roma, Atalanta, and Lazio. So they have to sort this out quickly.
So there are two other teams in this group. James briefly mentioned Salzburg. And your man, Erling Braut Haaland, even when they leave him on the bench...
Are you Norwegian?
Unstoppable.
Stay out of the headlines.
Unstoppable, yeah. And, I mean, it's not the most important goal he'll score for them, but, I mean, scoring in all his five first match days is a historic achievement.
Yeah, and, it is.
It's quite something, and for me, it's, again... It's distressing that already at this stage of his career, we're kind of almost running out of things to say about him. He is quite extraordinary. I think, again, the thing that he's not fazed by anything. You can throw him off the deep end in almost any setting. You know, when he played at Anfield, he'd been ill leading up to the game and was physically not right at all. And he still came on and scored a goal at Anfield. He just seems to be completely fearless and take everything in his stride. Everyone who's worked with him says he's really down to earth, really hardworking, which is really positive. And much has been made of him being a bit surly. But again, the fact that he doesn't seem to relish the limelight, I don't think is a bad thing. So very, very exciting. And inevitably, there'll be a lot of talk about his future already. And it's very, very tempting now when there's this much hype. And I'm sure it will be tempting to maybe try to cash in on that and go to one of the very top clubs. But I keep thinking, would be such a sensible move to move on to RB Leipzig in the summer. With the possibility of them letting Timo Werner go somewhere and him going into to be their new sort of big number nine there. Well, not that Timo Werner is a big number nine, but you know they're attacking
big name number nine.
Yeah,
yeah. And, well, think how many goals he would have scored in 9 minutes of injury time.
Yeah, well, indeed. But also just because Leipzig, because they don't have. I mean, we accuse some teams of not having history. I mean, Leipzig really don't have any history, and they don't have a lot. They're not a very glamorous club, but so it's easy to think of that as not being the big move. But for him, you would be going from the Austrian league to a club that sees themselves as a potential Bundesliga contender, as a team that wants to fight in the top of the Bundesliga. So you'll be it's a significant step up in terms of sporting quality. You go to a club where a lot of the style of play is roughly the same. You know, the methodology is not completely different. There will be more pressure, but not the kind of insane, crazy pressure that'll get lumped on your head if you're signed by like 80 million by Man United or something like this. Yeah. So it just seems like a really sensible move. So it'll be interesting to see.
We shouldn't lose track of the fact that he scored in every one of his Champions League appearances so far. And he has the opportunity, as does Robert Lewandowski, to become only the second and third players to score in every single group stage game. And the only person to do that so far was Cristiano Ronaldo.
Yep.
He's a teenager.
He's extraordinary.
And he's in a tough group with Liverpool and Napoli.
But you talked, Lars, about him having to make the right choice next. I mean, becoming a great player, it isn't just about the ability and even what you put in. It's about making the right choices at the right points during your career. I mean, clearly, he's made a fantastic choice in going to Salzburg. You talked about there being no real history at Leipzig. What they do have is a recent history of really looking after young players and helping them develop.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the fact that he went to Salzburg is a sort of case in point about how he's got good people around him. He's got his father, is a very sensible guy. I mean, they did have an offer from Juventus, for instance, and there were other clubs here where he could have gone, but they figured Salzburg was a good place for him to be for his development. And
has it all happened a little quicker than they expected,
though? For sure. I think it's quicker than anyone. I don't think anyone's surprised that he's kicked on and been very good, but I don't think a lot of people would have seen
this good, sort of good
phenomenal success coming.
I mean, my mind has slightly been blown last night by the number of kind of goals that were allowed and then disallowed.
His first one got chalked off.
Yeah.
What the hell?
I've no idea.
No. Right, because that is great centre-forward play. I mean, he essentially backs into the defender to almost help set himself to score the goal. But it's a contact sport. It's completely...
The guy was trying to foul him.
Yeah. I mean...
It's ridiculous.
And it was a great... I thought it was brilliant piece of number nine play.
It's the one where you wonder if there was like a different foul in the build-up or something, because that seemed very odd that would have been given against them.
But Lars, what have you made of Salzburg overall in the Champions League? I mean, they've been chomping at the bit for so long to get in it. They're finally here and they've contributed a lot. I mean, can you see that they've had good experience from the Europa League, where obviously they've done very well in recent years?
Yeah, which is the thing we've almost not spoken about, because it's all been about Erlingbad Holland, which I don't mind at all, obviously.
Yeah.
But after having been a team that for years and years and years just kept finding new and more interesting ways of not getting to the group stage, there's no secret that they're a team that are set up to compete at that level, that's been the aim for a very long time. And now that they've finally made it, it is good to see that they've made such a good fist of it and contributed. I know because of their association with the fizzy drink empire, there are people who feel like it's a bit of a soulless enterprise.
Energy drink's very on brand for you, though, isn't it?
Culturally, maybe it is not great, but in footballing terms, there's a really interesting project in the way they find young players from across the world and play really high-tempo, exciting football. So I think they're a positive addition to the scene.
I've been seeing a meatwalk. Welche Mannschaft hat gespielt meatwalk? Hat gespielt Met, oder gespielt Balder, oder gespielt Trapattoni?
Inter. It's a good week for Inter.
Hashtag not for everyone.
Very good, Lars. Very on brand. Impressed. Yeah, no, I mean, what a way to finish that game. Final quarter of an hour, it looked like they were making kind of... Well, I wouldn't say they were making heavy weather of it, but...
Well, Slavia are a difficult opponent, yeah, as they've proved in every game.
Slavia have been difficult, but, you know, I think Conte said that, God, we hit the bar twice, we had two goals disallowed. You know, these sort of things can kill an elephant. They won't kill my players. And I mean, I think it was the quality of the goals that were, well, the ones that stood and the ones that were disallowed as well were just magnificent. I mean, I think one of the goals of the match day has to be the Lautaro volley. The Lautaro volley, but of course the Lukaku outside the foot, left foot assist.
Yeah.
Is magnificent.
Well, it was something you pointed out on BT last night.
Mm.
As far as actual strike partnerships go, and of course a lot of teams out there don't go with two up top, how many are there better than that at the moment?
I don't think there are many, because both of these guys invariably score in the same game. You know, Lukaku will get one, Lautaro will get the other. They'll set each other up.
Mm.
And they have become like a two-man offense in the way that last night it was quite interesting, because, you know, Conte, who has, you know, cried essentially over, oh my God, you know, my team have broken the transfer record for me twice and they've not backed me, and all this sort of thing. And he's like, we only signed players from Sassuolo and Cagliari. How can we possibly compete? And then last night they're without Barella, who they signed from Cagliari, who was the first guy they broke the transfer record for. And then Sensi, who for the first 6 weeks of the season was the best player in Serie A. And everyone was like, oh no. Yeah, this is not going to go well for Inter. This is a bad time to be missing these guys. And instead, it was no problem. You know, Lautaro and Lukaku took care of business. Borja Valero, who'd only played a minute until the weekend, and then came on and played the second half against Torino after Barella's injury. He played a very mature, kind of experienced, kind of level-headed performance, which you need, I think, in those kind of nights when things don't look to be going against you. I mean, Conte again said, it was cursed. The game was cursed.
Well, yeah, we've got to go
back. Lukaku's header against the bar. Brozovic's shot against the bar. It was all going against us.
And we've got to go back and say there was the bit where they thought they were 2-0 up and ended up getting a penalty given against them.
Oh, my word, yeah.
And it was 1-1.
Yeah, extraordinary.
And
yeah.
They could have felt at that point, it's all going wrong for us again.
Yeah. I mean, this was also, I think, back to the game against Sampdoria where Alexis was playing. Ooh. And Alexis, if I'm not mistaken, had scored. And at the start of the second half, he goes down in the penalty area and you think, oh, they've got a penalty. They're about to double their lead. Game's dead. And instead, Alexis gets sent off for diving. And then Samp go up the other end and score. And all of a sudden, it's game on again, but lasted the distance and ended up winning the game. And it was a little bit similar like that. It's not, I would say, necessarily that the team hasn't faced things like that, but it just goes to show that this group, which is quite a new group of players, has so quickly assimilated Conte's, not only his ideas, but his mentality. Mm. Are doing some extraordinary stuff. I mean, I think they deserve more than that they've got in the group so far, given how well they played away at Barcelona, how well they played in the first half away at Dortmund. They've got the better of Dortmund on head-to-head, who they're level on points with at the moment. And, you know, ordinarily you would think Inter having Barcelona in their final match day is like, oh no, that's terrible. But I think they're looking forward to it. I think they believe on the back of what they did at the Camp Nou that they can beat Barcelona.
Is it more comfy playing a game against Barcelona, even an already qualified Barcelona, than it is being expected to win against PSV as they were in match day 6 last year? For example.
Yeah, and had they beaten PSV last year, they would have gone through.
Like, I mean, there's a sense of gala to it, isn't there?
Yeah.
You know, it's a big game. Even if Barcelona have already qualified, it's a big deal.
Yeah, no, without doubt. And I think they can't take for granted the fact that Barcelona will rotate and roll over in this game, because the number of times I've seen either Roma play against Barcelona when they've already been qualified on, you know, match day 6 and all this sort of thing, or some an Italian team need Barcelona basically to, you know, sort of down tools and say, you know, we've got a big game at the weekend, so we're not going to compete in this game. And they always, Messi invariably has a moment and they've won the game.
Well,
and that's the thing.
Valverde can't afford to do that anyway. They can't afford to go away and be shit, because he'll get a stick for it. Lars, yeah. What do we make of Antonio Conte in the Champions League? Because you spoke to people around him, to journalists who follow them, fans, going back to, I don't know, September. And a lot of them had the feeling that, well, they're not really going to go hell for leather in the Champions League, even though for most people, if they want to have a go at Antonio Conte, they'll look at his record in the Champions League. Yeah. But actually, despite being clearly fully invested in the title race in Serie A, they've gone for it in every game.
There's always been a bit of a paradox there, no? Because, yeah, it's true his record in the Champions League isn't great, but if you look at how his teams play, they should be quite well suited for knockout competition, right? They're really well drilled. Everyone in a Conte team will know what they're meant to be doing, and he likes guys who are good soldiers who'll do their jobs and run around, and like that tends to serve you well in sort of two-legged knockout ties, which is, of course, where it all is. I think they kind of had to... The fact they got such a difficult group, that you end up with both Barcelona and Dortmund, and that you end up with the Slavia Prague team, there are no pushovers, means that you are kind of forced into a situation where you do have to take it very seriously. Because going out of the group stage is quite bad, both in terms of prestige and in terms of the finances. And I'm sure from Inter's point of view, that's getting through is quite important. But if they can actually keep the pace...
Well, it's important insofar as Conte keeps demanding that they spend money.
Yeah, no, so, yeah, they have... They're already...
The club's in very sound financial
they
footing.
Are. But they're on sound financial footing, but there's the FFP thing. I mean, Suning might have a lot of money, but they can't just throw it at the club. Like, you're literally not allowed to do that. So it is important that they keep, you know, that they do well in the competition. And actually, I think it's a little bit under-communicated. There is a big difference financially between going out of the group stage and pushing on to the knockouts.
Oh, like, I mean, this is why
a lot of extra bonuses from
have got themselves into the financial position that they're in, is because the other Italian team is either don't get out the group stages or only one of them does, and we're going into match day 6 with the real possibility that four of them will, because even Atalanta could do a Newcastle
yeah.
and qualify even though they
it's
lost
what we all aspire to.
Lost their first three games. Yeah. So
and without Shola Amiobi. it just makes it all sweeter. But you say we've been talking about Lukaku and Martinez and Conte wanting more players, wanting strengthened. How excited is he about the potential return of Gabigol? Is there yes. Gabigol fever in Milan?
No, there isn't.
No?
No, which is kind of strange because, you know, on the one hand, you know, this is a guy who maybe came to Europe too young, too raw, wasn't ready for it, has gone back to Brazil.
He was ready for the nightclubs of Lisbon, let me tell you.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. He had, you know, that spell on loan at Benfica. It didn't work out for him at all. And, you know, he's... Yeah, since become the most decisive player in South American football. I mean, what a performance in the Copa Libertadores final.
What but last he was 5 minutes?
A strange he was, performance. But, he was terrible top, for 85 minutes.
Top scorer in Brazil, top scorer in the Copa Libertadores. And, you know, Conte's always complaining that he doesn't have options. Obviously, Alexis Sanchez won't be back until after the new year. And they have been playing Esposito, the 17-year-old, who came on again the other night. It was Marotta was asked about this before the game, and he says he will become an Inter player again, but we think it's hard to imagine that he will come back into our plans as for the first team. So I think they'll look to sell still.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
So Inter doing so well has pushed Borussia Dortmund out of the top two. I mean, we've spoken about it, or I've spoken about it in the Guardian Sport Bundesliga column at least, how it was a difficult weekend last weekend for Dortmund. They were, yeah, that's one way of putting it.
That's
isn't
a
it?
Way of putting it, Andy.
Yeah, they were 3-0 down against doomed Paderborn at half time at home at Westfalen on Friday night. They came back to draw 3-3, but still got booed off, and I think you can say quite rightly so. Then on Sunday there was the AGM where, as some people listening to this will be aware, Hans-Joachim Watzke, the CEO of Dortmund, came out and said, "Lucien, you still have our confidence, but we have two really big games coming up." couldn't have made it much clearer. The first of those, the second of those we'll come to later. I think we might have a little call for it in Games of the Week. But the first one was in Barcelona. And, you know, anyone can lose at Barcelona, Lars. But Dortmund gonna Dortmund.
Yeah, they were. And it's just not the fact that they lost, but they lost in an enormously predictable way. I mean, by being very, very passive at the back, just conceding really cheap and sloppy goals and just all the... And just there's a real lack of fire in the whole performance, I thought. And it was just such...
Resignation, like, would you say?
It was just all the things that you would...
Not from Lucien Favre. Not yet.
It was just all the things that you... It was almost like a lowlights reel of the sort of latter half of the Lucien Favre reign. Like all the things that annoy you about where it's been going wrong for them were all on display against Barcelona. And his big move of not starting Jadon Sancho, I think it almost backfired a bit, because you just look a bit silly when he comes on and he provides a real spark. And maybe he might argue that there was...
Scored, hit the bar.
Yeah, Favre might argue that there, you know, technical decisions, you know, you play Schultz and Hakimi on the flanks because you want more like defensive power against Barcelona away, and maybe Sancho, it is true Sancho hasn't been at his best in recent weeks, so maybe, you know, the frustration of being benched against Barcelona sparked something.
Humiliation.
Like, oh yeah, all this
more humiliation.
But
on
the thing
Jadon
is,
Sancho,
this is stuff that he might say, Favre, but the optics of it is that you look really daft. You've rested your most potent attacking threat probably, and he comes on and looks so dangerous, but by that point, of course, the game's already lost.
James, let's talk about Sancho. You kind of touched on it there. For people who are not aware of this, Jadon Sancho, his camp have leaked a few messages about what they perceive as his treatment in recent weeks, and none of it really plays that well for Lucien Favre in a time which is very difficult for him anyway.
Yes, I mean, there was the story in The Athletic from David Ornstein, which was saying that he felt humiliated for his treatment. Was it in the Clásica?
Mm. Yeah, when he got taken off after 36 minutes, and then Favre afterwards, this was the big deal, said, well, he wasn't injured. Even though he'd injured his hamstring against Inter about 4 days before.
Mm. Slightly strange.
Yeah.
Yeah, and wasn't saying he was a bad player, but was in, yeah, obviously, I think, needed time to recover, needed to be, to get in better physical condition, I think, wasn't it? I think it, and there was a sense that Favre, either not everything Favre had said had been relayed, maybe it hadn't been communicated well enough. I mean, this is a guy who principally speaks French and doesn't speak fantastic German.
That's the thing, isn't it? He's not the most adept communicator when he's in front of the media. And I guess, like with Unai Emery, you wonder, people begin to wonder, what's he like in front of the players?
Mm. And I think, it's curious the situation that Favre finds himself in. I think after doing, you know, good job at Nice, good first season at Dortmund, always giving the impression that this is a team that can win the league title, until people start saying they can win the league title, and then it invariably just falls apart.
But you look at his body of work, and you look at the way, after getting to a certain point, it fell apart at Hertha. Of course, he had them quite close to the title, unbelievably enough. We'll come to Hertha later. Borussia Mönchengladbach, when it fell apart very, very quickly as well. Is he just a coach to get you to a certain point, and not what Dortmund need at the moment, in terms of progressing, but not someone who can get them where they want to be results-wise?
I think it's a question that they're going to be asking themselves at the moment, Andy, because you know, after another heavy defeat in the Clásica, after the Paderborn game, yeah, I think they have to ask questions about whether he is, whether the players are responding to him. Not throughout all the kind of games, but it's curious how Marco Reus was saying that they only seem to start playing when they've got nothing to lose, when they find themselves behind.
That he's the spokesman rather, that Reus is the spokesman rather than Favre, is that the issue? Or is that symptomatic of the issue?
But it was a criticism of him in the spring when they were collapsing, when Zambara Bayern were coming up like zombies behind them and sort of eating up their lead, that Favre was too quiet, that he wasn't taking charge of the situation. And you know, we can over-egg the importance of managers shouting and jumping up and down like Antonio Conte, but there are situations where that is called for, and it's not something you ever see Lucien Favre do. And maybe that's part of why they brought back Hummels in the summer. They wanted a stronger voice in the dressing room. Lots of rumours that Favre wasn't a huge fan of that move, which again speaks to a sort of a discord within the club, right? It's not ideal if your club brings back a huge character like Hummels, puts him on a huge contract by Dortmund standards, and he might not even be a guy who the manager is mega keen on having there. But like, that's not a good situation.
And there's a sense that the, you mentioned Hummels and whether Favre was on board with that. I mean, generally, I think there's a sense that when it comes to recruitment, Dortmund have put players for certain positions to him. You know, like, well, I think maybe we could do with a centre forward, you know, more orthodox, natural centre forward. And Favre's like, well, I tend to play without strikers, so he'd probably just end up on the bench. And it's like, well, you've actually got to work with us here. We think that's a need. You know, you might be surprised. And, you know, again, you know, when it comes to plotting the way forward for Dortmund, unfortunately for them, Jurgen Klinsmann's no longer on the market in terms of someone who can,
someone who can back up Paco Alcacer.
It's interesting, Andy, because like if they were to pull the trigger and do what Daniel Levy did with Pochettino, where did they go next in season?
Well, you mentioned Pochettino,
Peter Struger.
you mentioned Pochettino. There's clearly some sort of financial issue if they were to want to have a go at him. But it's something that has been mentioned this week about Dortmund, at least some parts of the board, considering would Pochettino come? Lars, if you were Pochettino, would you go?
I think there's a financial issue there because he has he's technically on gardening leave from Tottenham. I think they've gone a bit Serie A with it, Tottenham, and he's kid. Basically keep paying him. So for him to go to Dortmund, he would...
It's like Luke when he's not on the pod. He still gets paid for it. But, you know, he's... That's
he does?
It. You know, yeah.
You guys are going to have to do a Napoli then and take a 25% pay cut.
I also don't wonder if... Footballing terms, I think he'd be a really interesting fit for Dortmund historically, you know, a high pressing team. And that's another area where there, I feel like there's a little bit of a discord between Favre and the club. Like, Favre is more of a counter attacking guy.
Yeah.
His teams historically have been teams that sort of make the stats people crazy because they sort of explode all the XG models because of the way they counter attack and the chances they produce. Anyway, so, but I keep thinking, I mean, our mutual friend Ralf Honigstein kind of mischievously suggested. Roger Schmidt on Twitter last night. I think that's what he was doing. He just wrote Roger Schmidt ?
Yeah.
I think that was quite...
I responded with Harry Redknapp.
Yeah, I thought about responding with Peter Bosch, but you've got to draw the line somewhere. But I think, yeah, Roger Schmidt is a guy who is out of work at the moment after finishing his work at Beijing Guoan in China, where I believe he was sacked, but he was given a very heartfelt farewell by the fans. I think he was quite well-liked over there. Did well for Beijing. And he's a guy who's... has a lot of interesting ideas, a sort of high-pressing guy, been to Salzburg in the past, you know, there were good moments at Leverkusen before it unraveled. I think that would be a really interesting place for Dortmund to go, potentially.
The Germans are terrific competitors. They never know when they're beaten.
Real Madrid versus PSG. Both qualified. It's pretty good though, wasn't it?
I think in terms of quality, it felt like a Champions League knockout game rather than, as you say, two teams that have already qualified for the knockout stages.
Is that because we finally had a Champions League-worthy Real Madrid?
Well, you think of some of the Madrid performances we've seen in this competition so far. The one against Club Bruges, for example, really stands out at the Bernabeu.
But it goes back longer than that, doesn't it? I mean, when they got their way to the title in 2018... They didn't play great the whole way, did they?
I think what was brilliant about this game was how everything was kind of 1-2 touch. It was super quick. I was watching some of the analysis afterwards, and Fabio Capello was talking about it, and he was saying, if you didn't watch this game, find a way to watch it, because it was supersonic in terms of the pace it was played at. And yeah, I think... in some respects, it did have a controversial VAR decision with the Icardi penalty and Thibaut Courtois red card being rescinded for a push on Marcelo all the way back, which I thought was a very soft push.
Certainly not my idea of what VAR should be getting involved with. But I think Real Madrid... Just moving on. Let's move on from the VAR. Let's just have as little VAR as possible.
No. I don't
do you want to talk about this?
I don't think we should. Icardi's listening to this thinking, it was the only thing I did during the game. Don't just erase it.
No, but I think VAR is controversial. People have opinions and they don't agree. I think a lot of people out there agree that ruling out goals or penalties in this case for sort of marginal niggly fouls early in the build-up is not what we want to see, right?
No, that's true. Well, Lars, let's completely get away from that then. And let's discuss Isco. Only two La Liga starts this season. First Champions League start in over a year. He changes the whole dynamic of the way that Real Madrid play. And sort of, we talked about their performances in the Champions League specifically. Takes them back, takes us back to the point in what, 2017? Where they end up winning the final against Juventus in Cardiff. In the home stretch, he's probably their best player.
Mm. In terms of natural talent, there's no doubting him. But it is interesting to see Zidane starting in a game like this, because it is. I know they're qualified. No, it's PSG, you know. It's a lot of eyes will be on them. And so it is a big game. And Zidane's not always been a huge fan of his. You know what sort of strikes you about Isco? He's 27 now.
Yeah,
like, this is one of those things I didn't realize. Just prepping for the show. Like,
do you have an issue? Do you have an issue with him because he's getting a beard to rival yours?
No, I don't have an issue. I'm just thinking that he's a guy who we would have thought would have fulfilled more of his potential at this point, and perhaps
how much of that
you
is
could
down
even
to
say
him?
That perhaps he should have left Real Madrid at some point.
Yeah.
Because he's never really fully made that place his own, which is a weird thing to say given he's coming up on 200 games for the club.
But
he's been there since 2013.
How much of that is down to him, James? Because you look at that, he gets that opportunity. They go back to this sort of 4-4-2, which they played in the early days of Zidane, and he's going to have to fight his way to get into that team. He made a huge difference. He's almost a defensive number 10 in a way because of the amount of work he puts in. And all of a sudden, you talk about great players not just being great themselves, but lifting up the level of the people around him. Benzema, you get a huge shift off him. Eden Hazard probably has his best game for Real Madrid. Toni Kroos looked absolutely fantastic with the space that Isco was able to create. What sort of argument really is there for Isco not to be in the team after seeing a game like that?
Well, because of his priorities, it's golf, Spain and Real Madrid in that order, I imagine. I find it curious with certain players who, you know, have had, well, in Isco's case, it wasn't even one or two moments. It was sustained period of high performance over 3 or 4 months in the biggest games of all, and making your team better. And yet there are players who have either been marginalized or have clearly been told that, just don't really fancy you. And Bale falls into this category, who have stayed at the club. And in some respects, you know, why would you leave Real Madrid? It is the quote unquote biggest team in the world. Every summer, well, I say every summer, but particularly last summer, you probably look at it and think, the club's going again. We can be competitive once more. They've won so much there that, they end up staying because of that. I just felt with Zidane coming back in, Isco might be someone who would find his Real Madrid career again kind of sort of revitalized by that, because of that old guard that we thought, these guys are dinosaurs now, you have to move on from them. He's one of the younger ones. As Lars said, I don't know whether Lars was saying he's 27 as though Lars now thinks 27's old, but I still believe 27's prime.
No, he is prime. I'm just, in my head, he's still this guy who's in his early 20s and hasn't quite made it, made it, obviously, but quite shown what we know he has in him. I do wonder, sorry to be the boring guy here, but his role here, He can only really play as a number 10, right? I mean, tactically, if they play 4-3-3 like they often do with the Casemiro, Kroos, Modric thing in midfield, does he play out wide like that? He doesn't really look comfortable out there. You have to kind of play him like a number 10.
It's a waste. And
I think that limits you a little bit. I think that might also be part of why he's really never nailed down the position at Real Madrid, because tactically, he does seem a little bit limited.
I think when we're talking about that 4-3-3 and Casemiro, Kroos, Modric, I think we've seen the end of that midfield three. Yeah. And Federico Valverde's performance said that a lot. But you know what? As Real Madrid managed to really boss it in midfield, and Valverde and Isco were a huge part of that, where do we see PSG? Because they've made a lot of positive impressions in the first four games of the group. They look more of a balanced side. And funnily enough, in this game, maybe it's because Real Madrid really turned it on. That's at least part of it. They looked back to a point where they're carrying a lot of front players who don't do anything when they haven't got the ball.
Which is a bit odd because they're not in the same way anymore. Mm. I mean, Mbappe is not really, you wouldn't characterise him as a, you know, particularly lazy forward. He's not Dirk Kuyt, but he's not, you know, and Di Maria puts
he's not Dirk Kuyt.
So they're only really in terms
I'd love it if Thomas Tuchel basically said, Kylian, we're going to have a video session today. This is what Capello did with Zlatan, but he showed him like Van Basten. Yeah. He said, I'm just going to give you a few DVDs and you're just going to watch Dirk Kuyt for the rest of the
Zlatan
afternoon.
Zlatan famously got bored and left after Capello left him alone. No, there's only really Icardi there, who's a guy who, you know, he'll just sort of hang around up there and wait for his chances. The midfield of sort of Gay, Marquinhos and Verratti is really well balanced, I think. And I quite like PSG as a sort of a... You can never really call them dark horses for money reasons, but as a team who can do better and make themselves proud this season in the Champions League.
That's who VAR's bad for, really, isn't it? Marco Verratti. So I had this Maverick section all planned out. Unfortunately, I think for time purposes, we're going to have to drop Memphis in summary.
It's all my early episode Daniel Wass chat that sort of unhinged the whole thing.
No. That really uplifted it, right. I think. But to summarise, Memphis, made captain of Lyon, celebrated by getting injured on international duty with the Netherlands. Rudy Garcia quite upset with Ronald Koeman. That's about it. Let's get to the meat of what people really want out of the Maverick section, especially from you, Lars. Zlatan buying a stake in Hammarby. How has that been received in southern Sweden?
It's a bit
in one particular part of southern Sweden.
It's worth putting in some background if we have the time.
Because
Hammarby is an interesting club. They're one of the big Stockholm teams. They are considered by many to be one of the team of the people there.
Well supported, right?
Very, very passionate support. Yeah. But they've never really been as successful as their support would suggest that they should be. And they've been in the second tier quite recently, at which point they were getting like the 30,000 in the second tier in Sweden at one point, which is pretty incredible. So in terms of that, you have a huge, I mean, anecdotally, I mean, there are some who claim they have the biggest fan base in the Nordics, which is a hard thing to prove, but you know, you get the idea what kind of club they are. So if you're going to invest in Swedish football, they're an interesting place to start, right? Because you have this team with a lot of fans, a lot of culture, a lot of history. You've never quite done it at the highest level, and they have to an extent, but you see what I'm saying, they should be one of the top Nordic clubs and they're not. So if you're Zlatan, you're thinking, I have a chance of going in here, and the reason he has presumably is because the ownership company that owns LA Galaxy, AEG, also owns 45% of Hammarby and have done for a very long time, and Zlatan has taken half of that ownership post. There's been some completely unconfirmed and alleged speculation that this is some form of compensation in a way for his work at LA Galaxy. Zlatan, you might remember, right, he was on a very low basic salary in the first season. So maybe this opportunity has come up as
stock options,
something like this basically. Yeah. And so on surface of it, you know, there are a lot of reasons why this is interesting for Zlatan to get involved in football in this way off the pitch. But I say a lot about what Hammarby is. Crucially, one thing Hammarby isn't is Malmö. It is not Malmö, and Zlatan is very much from Malmö. He is a child of Rosengård, and famously, there's this line, you can take Rosengård out of the guy, but you can't take the guy out. Oh, sorry, I messed that up.
But you can put the guy in Hammarby.
I completely inverted that saying. So, but the point is, he's very much from that place and associated with that place,
and now he's going to be building teams to take Malmö down.
This is the thing, and I think gradually people have kind of given up on the idea of him coming back to play for Malmö. He's been quite clear that he doesn't want to play in Sweden, that he doesn't want to do that. But the idea of him, a couple of weeks after a statue of him is unveiled outside of Malmö's ground, he takes an almost 25% stake in a rival.
Mm.
it's just not a good look, right?
It
just
speaking of good looks, how's the statue looking? Well, I believe you've got an update
for us. There has been fury. There has been fury in Malmö. It was vandalised. There was some graffiti. And then late last night, someone attempted to set it on fire, which is very difficult because it's metal. So it's not burning very well.
Also, Zlatan will surely just... This will be his new lion thing, right? It's like statues don't feel fire.
I suppose that's just what he should do. But there is even a Swedish Twitter account that is following the progress. Is the Zlatan statue still standing? And they're sort of providing regular updates on whether it's still there. And they're also putting out gifts of lions. So, I mean, that's where Swedish football Twitter is at the moment. It is one of the things that you look at and you imagine if there was a young Ibra knocking around Rosengård now, looking at this, the great footballing son of the city investing in a rival from Stockholm. He would have so much contempt for that. And there's this sense that Ibra is becoming something his younger self would have despised.
You know, after this, I feel quite sad that we won't be able to look to the Allsvenskan for games of the week. Let's look at what our games of the week are. I know you've got an interesting one, Lars.
Yeah, Hertha Berlin taking on Dortmund, which is interesting for all the Dortmund reasons we've spoken. You know, the heat very much on Lucien Favre at the moment. And he's being welcomed by Jurgen Klinsmann.
Yeah,
taking charge of Hertha Berlin.
This is interesting. Now, Ante Čović was clearly going to go after they were belted 4-0 at Augsburg last weekend. I mean,
which is a sackable offence in so many different ways.
You just don't lose 4-0 at Augsburg.
No, it can't be done.
And Augsburg was showboating so much. They put up something on their Twitter account when it was at 3-0. You might be aware that the Hertha BSC badge is like a flag. It's a blue and white flag with Hertha BSC written on it. And they put up something at 3-0, the Augsburg social media account, saying, I hope you don't mind, we've redesigned your flag. And they're basically taking the colours out of it, so it was a white flag. Nice, eh? I feel sorry for Čović because he's a guy, he's a real Hertha guy.
Yeah.
He's been involved with the club for 20 years. But it's not like they've taken a blind stab in the dark at just a name, because Jurgen Klinsmann has been co-opted onto the board a while ago. He's been going to all the games. He clearly knows the players and the club. He knows the ambitions of the investors, but he hasn't been a coach or a successful club coach for quite a long time.
Crucially, has he ever been a successful club coach?
No, that's a very good point.
But I guess it's interesting that he's brought on Nuri, ex Werder Bremen head coach, as a number two, that he's bringing some good...
as a number one.
Yeah, but I mean, yeah, that is the thing.
Klinsmann is not a coach, he's a guru.
Yeah, and this is what I'm getting at. I think there is something there in the sense that Hertha Berlin seems like a club that's in need of a reboot, right?
Yes.
Even when they were sort of moderately successful under Pal Dardai, they were a tremendously attritional side and not a lot of fun to watch.
You can say boring, it's a safe space.
Yeah, and not the kind of team that will, get the Berlin masses to the stadium. And they're a team that's been quite dull for a really long time. And if there's anyone who could use the sort of blue sky California thinking to come in and really sort of change it up and make it exciting and interesting, it's them. But you just wonder, can it work? Can it be successful?
Well, we'll start to find out this weekend. I suppose the other good thing about the appoint of Nuri, he really knows how to make a tracksuit look good, which is not easy. And I think when you're trying to build a brand, especially in a big city, that's important. You're not going for a big city derby, but you're going for a derby of sorts, James, for your game of the week.
Oh, it's definitely a derby. It's the first one for 13 years. Ooh. And I can tell you now, the forces of order, the police, probably unhappy that this is being restored. It's the Lombard Derby. It's Atalanta against Brescia in Brescia. And I tell you what, this is so fiery. It's crazy. In the 90s,
right,
we had pitch battles actually on the pitch between ultras. As I think Gans had scored. And I think it was the Brescia Ultras then just went and stole one of the flags from under the Atalanta end. And then
wow, that's a declaration of war.
It got crazy. But yeah, I mean, this has been some of the most iconic moments in this rivalry include Carlo Mazzone, the Brescia manager, getting sick and tired of being called a Roman. and then kind of losing his mind during the game, rather than focusing on his team coming back from being 3-1 down, he was in the slanging match with the Atalanta Ultras and basically threatened that if they got it back to 3-3, he would, I'm coming, guys. And they did equalise in the last minute, and Carlo Mazzoni basically ran over to the Atalanta end and just wanted to, he said he wanted to settle this mano a mano in a rustic fashion, like an old-fashioned duel. But unfortunately, there was a net and Pierluigi Collina stopping him from doing that.
Briefly and more seriously, James, I think listeners will want to know where Mario Balotelli's at. Dropped from the game against Roma by a new coach, Fabio Grosso, for not pulling his weight in training. And then afterwards...
Well, Massimo Cellino, the president of Brescia, some of you may be aware of his finest work at Leeds and at Cagliari, decided he was going to make a joke of it all, except his joke was racist. And this is the issue.
You've got to laugh
or
cry.
How can Mario Balotelli think his club is going to take the racist abuse that he suffers seriously when it appears that his president won't even take it seriously? And yes, you know, Balotelli has been called out by his new coach, Fabio Grosso. He was substituted at halftime in Grosso's first game against Torino. And then he was essentially told that he wasn't putting enough effort in training. So he was basically told to just go home after a training session or during a training session. And that's why Cellino was asked about this. But, you know, given his reaction, so this racist joke, given the communique put out by the ultras, the Brescia ultras, which was showing solidarity with Verona's ultras and the ultra movement in general.
Oh, for God's sake.
You wonder if this homecoming for Balotelli, and you can kind of sympathise, well, not only sympathise with him and the situation he finds himself in, but also the view which was taken by his agent, Mino Raiola, for a long time, which is just like, this is why we wanted him to play anywhere but Italy, because it is his home. He is Italian, but the abuse and the kind of victimization that he suffers is intolerable. And it's a shame because in some respects, this game, Brescia-Atalanta, I think is made for Balotelli, you know, who so often steals the show in the big games, the big moments. You think the Manchester derby, you think of some of the performances he put in for Inter or Milan in the Milan derbies. And this is the one that
should
mean the most most to him. And we don't know if he's going to play. There's already talk that come January, he'll be moving on. Maybe to MLS, maybe to Flamengo, where he was linked within the summer if Gabigol comes back. But we'll have to see. It's just, he's been treated despicably, I would say, and he deserves a lot better.
For my game of the week, I will be choosing the big Sunday night one between Atletico and Barcelona, which I would go as far as to say might not be that high scoring. Of course, Atletico creating a lot of chances. There are, I guess, you're probably your XG kings at the moment, Lars, but they're missing a lot of those chances. Of course, all the pressure is on Alvaro Morata at the moment because Diego Costa's got this injury. Morata is managing to miss a lot of these chances, like that big one he missed at Juventus in the week after missing a stack against Granada last weekend. There's a lot of pressure on him, isn't it, James?
Deary me. I mean, if he could learn to shoot with his left foot, it would help.
This was a Stakhanov production.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.